Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
The soft cover edition of Ron Rappaport's book, Let's Play 2, is out today. The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks. Ron, of course, one of our great sports columnists, was at the Sun-Times for a couple of decades, joins us this morning. From someplace warm, I guess. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Bob. How you doing? Right now, it's someplace dark, but that's okay, too.
Yeah. Well, listen, Ernie Banks, I mean, like a lot of people in Chicago and in the media, I got to know him over the years, and because he was one of my idols growing up, I always turned into a 12-year-old around him. I never got over the thrill of Ernie Banks actually knowing who I was. And you sat with him and recorded conversations over a long period of time for this book. Was that the background here?
Yeah, the idea was, he was living in California where I am, and the idea was that we were going to work on an autobiography. And while we were talking, he got into some pretty serious stuff, some interesting topics that were underneath the legend, Bob, the Ernie Banks that we all knew, it's a beautiful day for a ball game. You know, Ernie had a photographic memory. That's one of the reasons that he was so beloved, is that he would remember you from 5 years ago. Remember that, you know, your wife had been sick, or the names of your kids, that kind of a thing. But we were getting into some interesting things about growing up in Dallas and picking cotton with his dad and missing a year of school and never being around white people until he was in the Army, and his, you know, what it was like coming to Chicago and moving into a white environment. Those kinds of things that we don't always talk to Ernie about. And he was pretty honest with me, and I thought, boy, this is going to be great. An autobiography where we really dug beneath the legend, you know?
Yeah.
And then he pulled the plug, Bob, decided he didn't want to do it after all.
Well, so why? Why?
You know, there were his wife out here told me that he didn't want to do a book. He liked the idea of a book. And that, I thought maybe that was it. But I think that in the long run, he just decided that he didn't want people to know who he really was, the kinds of things we had been talking about, the disappointments and the difficulties of his life. For instance, he talked at great length about his feud with Leo Durocher. He went on and on and on with me. Well, he never spoke about that in public. Till the day he died, he never said anything. You know, Leo treated him just terribly, both in public and in the locker room. But Ernie never said a word till the day he died. Oh, Leo was just trying to motivate me. I was getting older. I needed a kick in the pants. Well, the truth was something far different. I just think in the end he didn't want people to know anything beyond the myth and the legend that he had built up for himself.
You know, Dave Ennett and I were talking about the book here a week or so ago, and that is the revealing message of this book, that Ernie was a sad, at times, lonely figure, wasn't he?
Well, he was, and when you think about it, when you think about the image that he presented, always happy, always smiling, always upbeat, always optimistic. Well, nobody lives like that. We all have disappointments and problems and difficulties. And the problem was that Ernie hid it. He just hid it. He developed this caricature for himself. He hid behind this mask. And here's the problem. When you do that all your life, one of his twin sons, Jerry Banks, who lives out here, told me, you know, if you live in a caricature all your, you know, for so long, you become a prisoner of it. And I think that was pretty well said, because if you do that and you hide your real self from the world, you hide it from yourself as well, and that can cause problems as well.
Ron, good morning. I know that Ernie wasn't the only player that Leo was tough on, but why did he treat him that way? Was it jealousy?
It was ego, Dave. Leo needed to be, the thing you need to know about Leo is he had this huge ego, more than anybody. He needed to be the biggest guy wherever he was. He needed to be number one. Now he comes to a situation where not only is Ernie number one, but he has the nickname for it, Mr. Cub. So Leo would stand in front of the writers out on the field, you know, before the game would start. He'd say, knock off that Mr. Cub crap. Mr. Cub, my ass. That kind of stuff. Well, in the, you know, very hurtful. We called him Gramps. Old man. That kind of a thing. He kept trying. He benched him many times looking for another first baseman. Ernie always won the job back. But think about it. You're the icon. You're the number one guy in the franchise. And this guy comes in and wants to take it over. So what Ernie wants to put you down, Leo decided that to be number one, he needed to knock down the guy who was number one. So the truth is he came to Chicago. He looked around, Leo did, and he saw that there were two guys who were revered and loved, and he went after both of them. One was Ernie, and one was Jack Brickhouse. He had a terrible feud with Brickhouse. Jack, you know, got along with everybody, couldn't stand him. Leo was really a tough character. But basically, it all came down to his ego, his needing to be the number one guy wherever he was.
It's a fascinating portrait of somebody we all think we knew, but when you read this book, you realize you didn't know Ernie Banks. Let's play two, The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks, more with Ron Rappaport after a quick break. Ron, you go into Let's Play Two here and how that started, and it seems like there were several different versions, but maybe the true one was that one day he just said it. What do you think?
Well, the problem with trying to get to the bottom of it, and of course Let's Play Two is Ernie's enduring contribution to the language. You hear it all the time, not just in baseball, not just in sports, but politics. You know, years ago, Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan went on a concert tour of minor league ballparks around the country. Well, what were they going to call it except the Let's Play 2 tour? It's that kind of a thing. Here's the reason there are so many stories about how it actually got started. The big reason is that Ernie never told the story the same way twice. Mm-hmm. He had a million different reasons. And the problem was that he always named a date. It was during the 1960 All-Star Game. He talked to Jack Quinlan. Remember Jack?
Yeah, my idol. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was in 1969 in July, and he was driving to Lakeshore Drive, and it was hot. Got to the ballpark, saw his teammates drooping and dragging, and said, let's play two. No, it was in August, and he came in through the inner city, recognizing where he could see where he had come from, and it was sort of an epiphany. Mm-hmm. And he went to the ballpark and said it. The nearest I can figure is that it started in Houston in 1960. The Cubs are playing the old Colt 45s in this open ballpark with not a whisper of shade. You know, one of those old-fashioned ballparks with no deck at all, just completely open. All the stands were open. And it was miserably hot. And Ernie fainted during the first game and couldn't play the second game. So his teammates all came in and said, let's play two, let's play two. You couldn't even play one. So it had to have started before that. Somewhere, Billy Williams told me this story. It had to have started somewhere around 1958, 59, 60. But as soon as Ernie saw that, you know, that it was his signature phrase and people kept asking me about it, and just very, you know, cleverly, he just kept it alive by giving everybody a different story. And when I went to look it up, I would read references to it in various books and in magazine articles and in newspaper columns and stories along the way, and I could see how he had manipulated it. He just kept telling the story, people are interested in this? Fine, well, I won't tell them the same old story. They won't be interested in that. So he'd invent something new. It was a beautiful example of Ernie's ability to sort of control the narrative.
Now, all of his hard times growing up in poverty, the racism he suffered in Dallas, helping his dad pick cotton, he never really talked about any of that or wanted to, did he?
No, he didn't really. He would talk a little bit. At one point, I talked to five of his high school classmates. I felt myself really fortunate to be able to find them. And also, Ernie's older sister, Edna, is still alive. Edna was the first of 12 kids. Ernie was the second. But I was able to find examples of him talking about it a little, that he would go out with his dad, and they would have coffee and something to eat before going out to the cotton fields, and how he kind of enjoyed it. But here's the thing. Ernie was a pretty good student. He was quiet. He never, not the kind who ever raised his hand in class. Ernie was a very quiet kind of guy who sort of stood aside and just watched. But he wasn't a bad student. Well, one year, his dad made him take an entire year out of school to go pick cotton. Hmm. And they were very worried that would be the last they would ever see of him, and he would just have to help his dad, you know, make money for the family, which they didn't have much of, you know, for the rest of his teenage years. Well, luckily, Ernie was able to come back to school and not only play ball, but graduate and get his career started. But I kind of shudder to think what it would have been like if he had just kept picking cotton as a teenager.
Ernie once told me that Jackie Robinson gave him this advice, just be quiet, listen, and learn. Is that true? Did that ever happen? Because as you say, Ernie kind of would change his stories over the years.
No, that was true. That I was able to narrow down. Ernie, after his first year with the Kansas City Monarchs, all of a sudden, the manager of the Indianapolis Clowns, Buster Haywood, tells him, hey, Jackie has this barnstorming tour where he goes all over the South mostly, actually ended up in California. They would play 30 games a year. It was the only way they could make any real money. They could make as much as they made during the season. And he wants you with it. He wants you on the team. And Ernie's response was, Jackie Robinson knows who I am? Hmm. I mean, he was thrilled. So he shows up and he plays with Jackie. And Jackie takes him aside and he says, I like you. I like your approach to the game. I like your talent. I like your ability. I think you're going to make the big leagues. But here's what I want you to know. Don't talk. Just sit and listen. Just watch. And maybe Jackie was thinking back to his early days when he was so famously told not to respond to any racial taunts or, you know, any situations, to turn the other cheek. Remember, Branch Rickey told him that. And so Jackie, that was the way Jackie broke in to the big leagues, by just being very, very quiet and careful and watching. Now, once Jackie retired, he became, you know, much more outspoken and voluble about racial issues and so on for the rest of his life. But Ernie saw this and watched. And now, so they go on this barnstorming tour, and now they come to Dallas, and his dad, who was a catcher for a Negro League's minor league team, essentially the Dallas Green Monarchs, comes down to watch. And Jackie and Roy Campanella and Don Newcomb all take turns telling Ernie's dad, Eddie, what a good player he is. And he said, my dad smoked two cigars that day, and the time it usually took him to smoke one. Hmm. He was so thrilled at listening to Jackie and these great Negro League stars tell him that his son was going to be a good ball player.
Well, I thought Rick Kogan summed up your book very well in his review in the Trib. He said, thanks to Let's Play 2, we can now remember Ernie as flesh and blood. There was a complicated and often melancholy man behind the sunny smile and the glittering statistics, a man worthy not merely of hero worship, but of our admiration and mercy. The book is Let's Play 2, The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks, Ron Rappaport. A lot of fun in this book, but also a story of a guy who, as we said, was lonely, and as Ron writes, kind of was always on, probably to help himself deal with the loneliness and sadness that he felt. Don't you think, Ron?
I do, and I also feel, you know, that this is a different portrait of Ernie. You're right, there is a lot of fun. You know, a lot of his great moments on and off the field, and, you know, telling the story of the 69 Cubs, I guess I wouldn't call it fun exactly, but it was good to relive those days.
Well,
you know?
But I like, you know, Fergie Jenkins giving him the nickname AM/FM because you couldn't shut him off. And then you've got a story in here about Al Spangler, who eventually played with the Cubs, but when he was an old Colt 45, he said, you know, you'd get to first base and Ernie would be there telling you it's a nice place and the weather is great and we ought to play three. And meanwhile, you're trying to get the sign from the third base coach. And you tell Ernie to please shut up. It's just such a great read. Congratulations on the book, Ron. And if anybody missed it when it came out in hardcover, you can get it now in softcover. Let's Play 2, The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks. Great talking to you again, Ron Rappaport.
Yeah, Bob, thanks. And congratulations on the new show. You know, I feel I've been talking to one Chicago icon about another. So
you mean Dave Emmett? Yeah, he's with us every day.
Absolutely.
Be well.
No, it's great to be on with you guys. You know, it was fun getting to the bottom of who Ernie really was. And I don't think that knowing, you know, some of the darker sides and some of the problems he went through makes us love him any the less.
Makes you love him more. Hope to see you down the road, Ron.
Okay, Bob. Great to be with you. Thanks.